Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business, take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
The Athletic.
I'm sorry, you can sit there and look and play with all your silly machines as much as you like.
Is Gascoigne going to have a crack? He is, you know. Oh, I say! Brilliant! Gee! He's round the goalkeeper, he's done it! Absolutely incredible!
He launched himself 6 feet into the crowd and kung fu kicked a supporter who was without a shadow of a doubt giving him lip.
Does it tame and tame and tame again?
Crank up the music! Charge your glass! This nation is going to dance all night!
The end of an era for football cliches royalty. The Premier League pure referees names 11. Just who is and isn't allowed to be included in the spine of a team? Did Frank Lampard really guide Chelsea to 12th place? Finding yourself in the opposition box? A deep data dive into footballers on reality TV shows? The waltzing through-book end of season rallying cry? A pre-engraved FA Cup? And Keezy's Premier League predictions revisited? Brought to your ears by The Athletic. This is Football Clichés. Hello everyone and welcome to episode 262 of Football Clichés. I'm Adam Hurry, the reigning champion of the Football Clichés quiz. And with me on the very last adjudication panel of 2022-23 is, first of all, Charlie Eccleshare. How are you doing?
I'm all right, yeah. How are you?
I'm fine. Thank you very much. How do we play this, Charlie? Do we call this the end of series one? 262 episodes.
Yeah, I know. Other podcasts do divide up into series for seasons, which we've never really done that, have we? I think just carry it on as one long thing.
Fine. Bit of a break, never hurt anyone. Yeah, we'll be back later this summer, somehow, somewhere. I'll tell you who won't be back, though. It's your partner on the adjudication panel today, Charlie, David Walker. It is your final episode of Football Clichés today. We bid you goodbye today after 129 caps. A living legend of the Clichés pod. How'd you feel?
I feel quite sad, really, after hearing that.
Me too.
129 caps. Look, I'm leaving The Athletic. Wednesday will be my last day at The Athletic. So, unfortunately, at this juncture, I have to depart the Clichés pod, which is terribly sad for me, hopefully sad for the listeners. I don't know whether to edit in some sort of sad music here afterwards or not.
I'll take care of that. Don't worry.
Maybe I could be like in a Jeff Stelling-esque turn of events. You'll struggle to find a replacement for me, and I'll just come back for the new season like nothing ever happened.
Fingers crossed, Charlie. That would be great, frankly.
Yeah, I feel like in Neighbours as well, people would quite often come back, or they'd be gone for, or maybe played by a different actor.
That's what I was going to say. We'll get Dave back, but with a different face and a voice.
I don't know what the rules are on that. But also, I mean, anyone who's been to one of our live shows would have heard Adam introduce David as David without whom everything would fall apart, Walker, and it's a terrifying prospect. Really, really is, not having you on this podcast.
Huge boots to fill. Dave, huge beats to fill. But let's crack on. We've got some business to take care of on the adjudication panel. And we kick off with Andrew Little, who has a bone to pick with something that Dave told us recently about his Sunday League administration, that there had been an asterisk next to a team's name because they've been deducted points for fielding a ringer. Well, Andrew Little writes in and says, just wanted to offer some further insight into the asterisk in Dave's league. I play in the same league for Wandsworth Warriors. I wouldn't describe the player in question as a ringer. The lad was banned for 6 months after chasing our team round with a corner flag after being sent off. In the end, armed police turned up and the player became known as Stabby Bloke. Bloody hell.
Wow.
6 months for that.
The information I had previously was told to me in good faith. I had no reason to not believe it, but I can believe this story. I have heard of similar incidents within our league, very isolated occasions here and there. But Christ, a corner flag!
I know.
So this player was banned and then played despite being banned. Is what happened. So he wasn't a ringer as such.
Is that what you're saying?
Wow.
Yeah.
He must have played while being banned. That must be the points deduction situation. But, God, he would have got more if he'd actually bet on the game, I would assume. Next up, loyal listener Elizabeth Barnard has got in touch with some stellar content. She shared with me the group chat's pure referee names 11 of current Premier League players. Charlie, here's the back five for you. In goal, Dean Henderson. Mm-hmm. Bit more linesman-y? Maybe not.
Yeah, maybe goalkeepers is quite a narrow pool. Hmm. Is it a slightly too interesting name? I'm not sure.
I don't think it is, actually, to be honest. A back four of Andrew Robertson,
yep.
Michael
yes.
Keane,
yep.
Craig Dawson, which is basically Craig Dawson, yeah. which is fun. And a slight wild card here, name-wise, Ryan Fredericks. I'm not on board with that one.
I don't know. There does tend to be one sort of wild card with a slightly more interesting name.
Oh, right, yeah.
Each year.
Yeah.
I mean, isn't there an Andrew Robertson who works for the PGMOL or something?
I don't know.
Maybe I've imagined that.
Yeah.
It feels like there should be, or there could be.
In midfield, Dave, Stuart Armstrong,
yep.
Oliver Skip,
yep.
and Adam Forshaw.
Forshaw, I'm not so sure about, but the other two, yep, definitely.
And a front three, Charlie, of Anthony Gordon, yes. Patrick Bamford, yeah. And David Brooks, which is...
David Brooks, I think he's a VAR. I mean, I know they are also referees, but I also think the VAR, of course, there is David Brooks.
Under fire VAR David Brooks. Yeah, solid effort. I give that a solid 7 out of 10, Elizabeth and co. Well done for that. And very original stuff as well. Glad to have it. Right, let's dig into this. This is Sky Sports News, Charlie, reviewing the relative success of Newcastle signings this season.
I think you look at three in particular, Kieran Trippier, Dan Burn, Nick Pope, that's the spine of this Newcastle team. And as you said before, the defence was such a key part at the start of the season. They form the backbone to success. And you wonder how much Bruno Guimaraes is worth now, £40 million.
Jamie writes in, Charlie, says, can a spine of a team be two fullbacks and a keeper? How strict should we be with spine?
Definitely not. That is not the definition of a spine.
I know it isn't. One final flourish for literally Dave. Okay, well, that's fine. Yeah.
Yeah, they're not like regular fullbacks. I do kind of, like, I know it's very rogue doing this to say that it's a spine. And obviously, you know, technically it's not. But they are, you know, like Dan Burn, he's kind of more feels like a centre-back than a fullback. I know he doesn't actually play there.
This is an absurd defence of it, I have to say.
Just slightly playing devil's advocate. And
right.
And Kieran Trippier obviously is like, if he's not the actual captain, then he's very much feels like the de facto captain and leader of that team.
Yeah.
So I think it's a stretch, but I kind of know what he's getting at. Those feel like three of the leaders of the team anyway.
I think a slightly more appropriate word would have been they form the bedrock.
Bedrock would have been good.
Because he's saying the same thing, but you can't get away with spine with, you know, they're the shoulder blades. As opposed to the spine, I guess.
The ankles, I don't know.
Or the hips, I don't know, maybe.
Yeah, I mean...
The pelvis.
In some mitigation, Charlie, two very influential players at fullback there, and you're allowed a goalkeeper. Goalkeepers are allowed in a spine, right?
Yeah, I think
yeah.
so.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think they're an optional extra. You don't have to have a goalkeeper in your spine, do you? But yeah,
they're the coccyx.
yeah, sort of undersung, aren't they, the coccyx? But, you know, evolution. But what's the minimum number of players in a spine, Dave? Two or three? Like, could you have two players in a spine or does it have to be three?
I think three. I think ideally you want a defender, midfielder, striker.
But does it have to be? Like, I think three is definitely the minimum, Charlie, but could you mix and match? Could you have two defenders and a midfielder as a spine? It has to be all the way up.
Yeah, you might. I mean, because often you hear about it, it depends, because you talk about, like, they're missing the spine of their team is what I most think of spine being used.
Yeah.
And I think you could slightly retrofit that. If it was like two centre-backs and you're holding midfielder, I think you could say they're messing the spine of their team.
What about a goalkeeper, centre-back, central midfielder, if you get the striker?
Yeah.
I think that's what I was going for. Yeah, I think you can have three of the four. Definitely have three of the four. And it could skip a vertebra as well. Like, you could have goalkeeper, defender, striker. If it was someone like Harry Kane, who is very talismanic and not just a goal scorer, I think that would be acceptable. But in summary, Charlie, no wingers allowed in a spine?
Yeah. Unless they were very unusual and sort of almost played like a central midfielder in some ways. In a bit, like I'm saying how with Byrne, he has quite centre-back energy, even if he's not actually a centre-back.
I know exactly what you mean, yeah. And Trippier does other stuff, like, as you say, captain, set-piece taker, lots of very central, and lots clearly very good in the dressing room as well. Mm. Yeah. Okay, interesting. Delighted with this timing. This is our last episode for a while, but this is an absolutely genre-defining Whisper It But. Dave from The Guardian, Whisper It But Scotland is on the verge of becoming a space superpower. Yeah! how could you be more Whisper It than that?
I don't know what the context is. I'm curious to know why it's a Whisper It. Have they had a lot of false dawns before? Like, have Scotland come close but sort of lost to NASA in the final?
Have they just been quietly getting on with their space business in the background?
What a job they've done up there, I have to say. Yeah. The subhead reads, Dave, despite the demise of Virgin Orbit, the UK's first spaceports should open in 2024, complete with what looks like an artist's impression image of a rocket being fired off a very, very small Hebridean island, by the looks of it. Fair play to them. I don't know.
So maybe it does sound like
a tax breaks thing. Who knows?
Has been an element of false dawn, then, it sounds like. Yeah. In that sense.
Yeah.
Up and was there a golden age? Did they have loads of great astronauts in the 70s?
Well, Cape Canaveral just been, they had a stranglehold over it all, haven't they? Kazakhstan big in the game, if you're a cosmonaut fan, for your sins. Anyway, it's time for My Sins Corner. Dave, Charlie's going to do you no favours here, by the way.
Yeah, this is going to be like a testimonial.
This is huge. Yeah, exactly. Don't let him tap it in. Don't let him get a penalty. You know the drill. I'm going to play you a clip from national media. The phrase, for my sins, will be uttered. You just have to guess when it'll be. Anyway, this one comes from Five Riddim and Mike Walker. It's from BBC Radio 5 Live on Saturday.
If Chelsea don't slip up, there's nothing that Manchester United can do. So we'll talk about the WSL title race, much more to come on the playoff final and the battle down the bottom of the Premier League. But our big commentary this afternoon comes from Twickenham. The Premiership final, Saracens Sale. It kicks off at 3:00 and Sonia McLaughlin is there.
And I'm standing, Steve, right next to the Premiership trophy, which I just tried to lift up for my sins and failed miserably. Oh. Both Matt Dawson and Chris Jones looked at me as if to say, come on, you can do better than that. I'm sure that Owen Farrell or John O'Ross.
We both went too early. Yeah. Just too early.
It was the beat before.
I mean, trying to sort of tap into your mindsets as you did it. Charlie, I think it felt like the most logical point of that clip to say it. But even then, standing next to a trophy for your sins didn't feel right, did it?
Yeah, I know. In retrospect, if I could do it all again, I'd do it very differently. The only thing is there a bit of like bad luck about standing next to a trophy? I think that in the split second that I had to think about it. Isn't that, you know, like don't touch a trophy is bad luck.
Maybe. I mean, not for her. She's a BBC radio reporter. True. I don't really see what the ramifications would be. Dave, Charlie says if he could do it all over again, he reckons he'd nail it. But to be honest, the end result of this, the For My Sins, was her saying she tried to lift it for our sins. I think it's one of the least For My Sins-y situations we've been confronted with.
If I'd waited, I don't think I would have gone in there.
No. A challenging one to end with.
Yeah, it's not quite the right phrase. I'm trying to think what would be more appropriate for that. Because it's almost like...
Well, maybe she wasn't allowed to do it, because you're not really allowed to touch trophies, are you? Because there's always a ridiculous bouncer with white gloves standing by, like a hench snooker referee not letting you do anything. So the weird protectiveness of trophies, pathetic behaviour. Right, next up, well, the worst kept secret in football, I guess, Charlie, is the appointment of Mauricio Pochettino as Chelsea's new manager. The BBC Sport report went as follows. Chelsea have appointed former Tottenham and Paris Saint-Germain boss Mauricio Pochettino as their new manager. The Argentine 51 begins his new role on 1st of July 2023 on a two-year contract with an option for a further year. He takes over from interim boss Frank Lampard, who guided Chelsea to 12th in the Premier League. Are we giving Lampard guided?
What, with one win? That's not a guided.
It's not a guided in any way. No matter how you slice it, Dave, this is not a guiding, is it?
No, because nothing about his tenure suggests that he's been in control of the situation in any respect. So it's not. It's definitely not a guiding.
I don't think there's an alternative here, actually.
Well, that's the problem, because it was so bad. But obviously, they don't want to get into how bad it was just there. I mean, could you say who took or who led? I mean, I know led also sounds wrong because there's obviously been like a leadership vacuum, but is took just sort of vague enough and factual enough? Because that's all you're really wanting to say.
Yeah, would you say
took, it still implies an upward trajectory to me.
Maybe. Yeah, I would have gone with something like whose second spell in charge ended
with a 12th place finish.
With a 12th place finish, something like that.
Because often you could go with left with, but I don't know if you leave at the end of a season the same way, because you're not, Pochettino won't be picking them up in 12th.
Yeah, that's right.
That would be the default, I think.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, left them in 12th, but the season's over, so it doesn't work. Agreed. Shame. Now, email came in from Maximilian Campbell, who has, I'm delighted to say, brought back to my attention the sing-song Serie A commentator. He's back. He says, not auditioning for Les Miserables anymore, but just as preposterous. This is genuinely some of the best intonation I've ever heard. I put it all together in one little clip for you. This is from the illustrious surroundings of a 0-0 draw between Lecce and Spezia.
Nzola brings Spezia forward. Nzola! Esposito. Straight at goal. Esposito's attempt. Falcone unworried. In it comes, free header, Nzola, Aguadelo, through the legs, Aguadelo, Ampadu, Ekdal.
This sounds like an old computer game where it isn't quite fully joined up and you get weirdly pronounced names just chucked in.
At Barry Davis on Actual Soccer, Shira. Shira!
Exactly.
It's honestly absolutely fascinating, Dave. And it's got to the point now where I don't dislike it. I mean, it's a 0-0 draw between Lecce and Spezia. You might as well jazz it up.
Was it the last game of the season?
No, don't think so.
But we're in that territory. Maybe he's on the beach and he's just thought, I'll have a bit of fun here.
Yeah.
I'm just going to go for it. He's really taken the handbrake off.
Well, they are colourful surnames, Charlie. I guess you've got to let him off a bit.
It does sound like he's just really enjoying himself, which is great. Yeah. Like, it sounds like he's doing it with a smile on his face, slightly knowingly.
In a booth somewhere, let's face it. So, got to enjoy it somehow. Former Clichés guest Josh Pugh tweeted this the other day, Dave. Just heard a football commentator say that Ben Mee has found himself in the opposition's box. Great to see people reaching self-enlightenment, even in the midst of a sporting contest. So refreshing. Setting the joke aside, it did make me think that only centre-backs can find themselves in an opposition 18-yard box, as if they weren't there by design. It's just like, oh God, what the hell am I doing here? Is it kind of nosebleed related?
Is it most often deployed when a centre-back's gone up for a corner or a free kick, the ball's gone out and they've stayed up and they've come back in and they've sort of lingered around. They're like, oh, you know, they're still there and a chance is presented to them, not necessarily like a header. The ball might fall to them in a position where you would want a striker to be and they find themselves in the penalty area.
Completely agree.
I think you might have it from that. I mean, that scenario is where people are going to find themselves in weird positions. You might have it something like, if say a goal then went in from like a second phase from a corner or something, you'd be like, and he's found himself on the inside left channel, which wouldn't necessarily, I think that could even be like the wrong fullback or something. And it you know how it looks really weird when a fullback who's taken a corner is then almost having to play like a winger who's cutting into their good foot. Like, there's nothing weird about it from a corner, obviously we're used to in swinging corners, but it looks so weird when Trent or someone is on the left hand side. There's just something wrong about it, and that will come from a sort of set piece that's been only partially cleared.
Yeah, I think this element of chaos is crucial here, Dave, because you know, if a striker makes a very deliberate, crafty run to fool his marker and then create space for themselves to nod it home, that isn't finding themselves somewhere because they've done it all themselves. It was all purely by design. I think finding yourself somewhere is purely chaos theory situation, and that's why it suits kind of clueless centre-backs with their noses bleeding.
Yeah, I agree. Maybe late in a game, if they've just like gone on a mad sort of joined in a counter-attack sort of situation.
Yeah.
Did Paul Stalteri find himself in the six-yard box for that winner against West Ham?
Yeah, that's a good shout.
All right, Ecouchere, bloody hell. Great stuff.
Well, he popped up. I guess it's more of a popping up.
Yeah.
Than found himself.
Yeah, I think they're natural bedfellows, popping up and finding yourself. Although popping up does imply a little bit of crafty movement, doesn't it? Johnny
Maybe.
On the spot. You can't be Johnny on the spot and find yourself, I don't think, necessarily. Depends if you score or not, I suppose. Brighton against Manchester City last week, they secured European football for next season, Charlie. Europa League, no less. Commentator James Fielden got in touch and says, Brighton playing the Europa League theme on the PA system after qualification is surely a first. I saw some blowback about this. Some people saying it was tin pot behaviour. I mean, I think it's part of an extended theme of PA systems getting a little bit bolder this season and just trying to be part of the equation a little bit too much. But I think this specifically, I've got no beef with. I think it's quite quaint, quite charming. And I don't mean that in a patronising way, although I slightly do.
Yeah, I wasn't aware of that and I haven't seen that before. I think it is quite a good idea. I mean, I wonder how people would feel if it was done for the Champions League. People would probably, because I think the Europa League, because it's more often than not been a competition played for by teams who want to be in the Champions League, and therefore it's a bit of a sort of gag anthem as well. Like, you're in the Europa League and you've got to listen to this silly da-da-da-da.
And it's ironically enjoyed by a lot of people as well, which I think lends it an air of acceptability. Dave, if someone had played, say Newcastle, had they played the Champions League theme after securing Champions League qualification, that would feel a bit.
That would,
you haven't got the level of irony there, have you?
No, that would turn too many heads. That would be too easy a target for
when they go out early.
You know, the
season.
Celebration police to get stuck in.
That's true.
Whereas I don't think, you know, a lot of people wouldn't be able to pick out what the Europa League theme is. So they might not even have noticed if you're in the stadium. Or
yeah, just a piece of after game music that they thought was a little bit dramatic. Yeah, it could work.
I think Brighton have definitely celebrated getting to the Europa League more than I've ever seen any other team.
Yeah.
And maybe that's fair enough because of where they've come from.
Yeah.
But I sort of like it in a way. Like, why not? Just, it is a big achievement for them. So just go for it. You shouldn't be ashamed of it.
No, I agree. But I think, Charlie, you had to be careful though, because I mean, Europa League probably fine given the factors we've discussed. But if you did play the Champions League theme, It really does ooze kind of 18,000 Swiss franc fine from UEFA, doesn't it? For, you know, not being allowed to play it.
So you think you would get
improved occasions.
They have to play Zadok the Priest just to get around the copyright.
Yeah, Tony Britton, the composer, completely publicly exposing him as a fraud. I don't know, where do you draw the line though, Dave? Did you get little kids to wave a little ball kind of canvas in the centre circle? Do UEFA have the rights to that? Maybe Brighton should have done that.
For one game only, you sell Amstel and Continental tyres after the game.
Yeah, like inexplicably shut off the first three rows of your seats.
Yeah.
I think there is an element of, I mean, Brighton have obviously made it Europa League specific there.
Yeah.
But more broadly, there's a sort of more element of we're all going on a European tour about it, isn't there? Like, that's kind of what you're celebrating, the fact that we're in Europe, we get to go and have some away days.
Yeah.
The competition, I think, like, Villa were doing that. Obviously, Villa, you don't really want to celebrate the Conference League in the same way, do you? But you do want to celebrate the fact that you're in Europe.
Well, I remember in Dream Team, fictional, beloved TV show, when Harchester United qualified for Europe, either it was the game they did it or it was like prior to them playing their first European game, it was, and we're encouraging fans to bring their passports in celebration of our European journey, which always felt to me would feel really risky. You don't want to bring a passport to a football match. I mean, I don't know if there was...
You can make a giant fake one.
Yeah, maybe it was more encouraging fake ones than actual ones, but that would feel like... That would preoccupy you during a game. You have a few beers, got your passport in your pocket.
A fan could throw it on the pitch at the end as well. It'd be great if they lose that game.
Sod it.
I'm not coming now. I got a Devon instead.
Oh, how this unravelled. I'm not sure. Next up, this is honestly superb. This came from listener David. Ah, this is superb. This level of engagement is what I want for the Clichés Pod in perpetuity. He says, I was very interested in your recent podcast discussion on the quality of footballers appearing in reality TV shows. I must take issue with the idea presented by Dave that Strictly Come Dancing and I'm a Celebrity managed to book a similar quality of footballer. Strictly footballers are quite clearly superior to I'm a Celeb footballers. The eye test backs this up. But I've also, with the help of Wikipedia, dug into the data.
Great.
No phrase fills me more with joy than that. Here we go. Footballers to appear on Strictly Come Dancing. Peter Schmeichel, John Barnes, Peter Shilton, Robbie Savage, David James, Alex Scott and Tony Adams. Average club appearances, 746. Average international appearances, 90. This is like top trumps. This is seriously good stuff, Charlie. Like, this is a high bar.
I said this. I thought Strictly was a decent caliber.
I mean, can't argue with this metric, Dave, either, as we head into the comparison. Footballers to appear on I'm a Celeb. John Fashanu, Neil Ruddock, Rodney Marsh, Jimmy Bullard, Kieran Dyer, Wayne Bridge, Dennis Wise, Harry Redknapp, Ian Wright, David Ginelaar and Jill Scott. Average club appearances 456, average international appearances 28. It's as stark as you could get.
Yeah, I'll give it to him. Yeah, I don't know. There are, you know, there's a bit of pedigree there in the I'm a Celeb lineup, but I get the overall vibe is very different.
Yeah, I get that. I know what you mean. Statesman for Strictly, clowns for I'm a Celeb, basically, isn't that's what it is. Listener David continues. He got some caveats to the data, Charlie. He says, as they are not predominantly known as footballers, I have not included in the data either Nicky Byrne of Westlife, 11 appearances for Cove Ramblers in the League of Ireland, or Mark Wright, one sub appearance for Crawley Town in League Two, which I think is right.
That's good. Yeah.
Right, to do. Very, very diligent stuff. He goes further, Dave, based on this data. Based on his XA data, he says we can expect to see either Michael Owen or Brian Robson on Strictly at some point soon. I can't see Brian Robson on Strictly.
I think his time may have come and gone, but Owen would do it.
Yeah, I think Owen's a great shout.
Yeah. And then I'm a Celeb, Charlie. We can expect appearances from Jamie Vardy or Phil Jones. Honestly, yes.
Has Rebecca Vardy been on? Was she in it or not? Am I just sort of confusing that with someone else?
Picture arcs.
Sounds about right.
In that
was Colleen on?
I don't think Colleen's
probably
done it.
Just making that up, completely making that up. But I'm sure he'd be on the list. He'd definitely be a target. If he retires this summer or as soon as he does retire in the next few years, if you're I'm a Celeb, you're definitely going to go for him.
Rebecca Vardy did I'm a Celeb in 2017.
Well, there you go.
There you go. Finally, Dave, listener David says, I haven't delved into the Celebrity Big Brother records because even I won't stoop that low.
I think Danny Drinkwater would go on Celebrity Big Brother.
Yeah, that I see what you mean. Kind of with a bit of a backstory to say about why his career fizzled out. And then there's going to be a very convenient moment, you know, sat around the pool or something where he talks about why it happened.
Yeah.
Would Agbon Lahore do Celebrity Big Brother?
Yeah.
Sort of imagine that.
Yeah, any kind of Barclays era.
I think he's not, with his sort of last year and a bit on TalkSport, it's sort of kind of brought him back into the consciousness. I think he's out of the question for I'm a Celeb.
Jamie O'Hara would do I'm a Celeb.
I think Jamie O'Hara could do I'm a Celeb. I don't think Agbon Lahore quite has the profile.
Agbon Lahore, much better player than O'Hara.
Footballers are easy to market for these programs because it's like swapped his boots for the hiking boots or something. Oh, you know, swapped his captain's armband for a hammock or something bullshit like that.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is supported by Season 3 of FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher division. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenges and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Catch all new episodes Thursdays on FX. Stream on Hulu.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic.
See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code The Athletic and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Oh, look at that! That is wonderful!
Brought to your ears by The Athletic. This is Football Clichés.
Next one comes from Alex Nedvedek. I was watching the newest episode of Ted Lasso for my sins, and commentator Arlo White has just said this.
Is this the equaliser? No! A swashbuckling save by the mad Canadian.
Van Damme has been good today.
Open and shut case for me, this, Charlie. You can't have a swashbuckling save, can you?
No, it's a very TV or football in film style thing that would be said. Just like overly engineered and not really true to life.
Swashbuckling is an offensive move. It's not a defensive.
It's gallivanting upfield, isn't it? I think the only way I would have accepted swashbuckling save is if he'd sort of swung down from the rafters on a rope and then stopped the ball going in.
I mean, Rene Higuita's scorpion kick was arguably a swashbuckling save.
Yeah. Or if he caught it and then run upfield with the ball at his feet, like Higuita was wont to do. So Higuita, very much the most swashbuckling goalkeeper. It could work. Alex Nevedek says, surely this can't be allowed. Surely Arlo White knows better. I feel like I'm going insane.
Just read the words on the script, mate.
Yeah.
That's your job.
Yeah, don't blame Arlo White. He says what he's told to say. Right. Next up, this came from The Athletic's Alexander Abnos. This is from St. Louis versus Vancouver in MLS. Max Bretos on commentary.
Hits it nicely. Oh! Uchimagoot Susudio Edward Leuven hit that one from the Mississippi River. One saddle, St. Louis City.
It's just absolutely ridiculous. There's no context to tap into here, Charlie. It is just absurd.
I mean, Dave will know better than me, but that sounds quite like wrestling commentary. That sort of language and just general hyperbole.
Yeah, I see where you're coming from. He's just gone with everything there.
Mm.
All of it. He's not holding anything back. Just chuck all the lines out in one go.
In the hunt for context, The Athletic's Emily Olsen got in touch with Bretos to find out what prompted the reference. He says, many moons ago, I was watching David Letterman and he was doing this skit on his show. For comedic emphasis, he said, Uchmagooch Susu Studio. It always stayed with me as an expression, in large part because of the Phil Collins reference. During the goal call, when the ball was heading in and I was saying, ooh, that expression hit my memory. I ran with it. Not planned, just an emotional reaction. I mean, I'm glad it was kind of an instinctive thing, Charlie, because you can't be that confident that people are going to know what the hell you're talking about.
Yeah, that's fair. That's pleasing in a way, that it was just like the moment took him.
I agree. Right, moving on. Interesting poser on Twitter this weekend by Grace Robertson, Dave. Stelling leaving Soccer Saturday, BT Sports score stopping altogether. Have we just outgrown the need for these shows? Felt for years like Twitter on a Saturday is just a better version of that. Is this a real nail in the coffin for the score show? Like, does it have a healthy future or not? Or is Stelling leaving just an incidental bump in the road?
Add Football Cliché's summer hiatus onto that list.
Oh, we'll be back with a live score show this summer.
I saw Jules Breach. I saw her post on Instagram sort of picture of the whole BT Sports Score team. I just sort of assumed, without any knowledge of it, that they would just come back and do the same thing, but it'd be called TNT. Final score or something, which maybe that's not going to be the case. Obviously, that is a sort of fork in the road as far as BT Sport and their programming is concerned. Whereas Sky, you'd assume it's just going to be huge boots to fill, as they found out last summer when they couldn't find a replacement for Jeff.
Yeah.
But I mean, surely that show's going to come back. You could rethink it. You could take the opportunity to say, you know what, Jeff's gone. We can't get another Jeff.
Change the studio at least. Like, do something. Yeah. I don't know. Charlie, we've discussed at length the nature of these shows before. I don't want to get stuck into that again. But maybe they are odd in one way, because they're probably ring-fenced from the kind of, are they getting the ratings? And they're probably not judged on that basis, because, like, like, no one cares about the ratings for Soccer Saturday, can you imagine? Because it's probably fairly consistent. Like, it's never going to go up or down for any reason, is it?
I think it may have done over the last few years. It certainly feels like it used to be such a part of...
Well, it's the same show every week. That's the thing. It's not like a game where there are different quality of teams and there's context and you may tune into
great
one.
Great episode of Soccer Saturday.
It's good, but it's just exactly the same every week. So yeah. It just exists.
But I do think the fact that on average the general level of 3 p.m. games has got quite a lot worse. Mm-hmm. Because more games are on TV, more teams play on Thursday, so therefore on Sunday. I do think that has made a bit of a difference, because you used to get quite often like bumper Saturday 3 o'clock sets of games.
Yeah.
That's increasingly rare, and therefore to sort of sit down and be getting like updates of pretty medium looking games,
die by a bumper Premier League Saturday for better. I mean, I know how democratic Soccer Saturday is, and I love the fact that they cast their net so wide, but when you see like a proper Premier League reporter has been dispatched to Rotherham, with all due respect, you know it's a weaker day of fixtures. That's just how it is.
I suppose you could envisage a world, maybe if not next season, in like the near future, where only the BBC do it, because they do it because it's kind of a public service thing for people that haven't got Sky or don't have access to the internet or whatever. You know, they just want to watch it on their TV on a Saturday. Whereas Sky and BT and other commercial companies, if they decide that actually there's no one watching and then we don't need to do it, we could just do something else. And then who knows what happens if the old blackout one day gets canned, then the whole thing's up for grabs, isn't it?
I suppose ultimately, whilst the format has its merits, Charlie, as a kind of enduring thing that no one's ever going to fall out of love with enough to cancel it, you don't need three of them, I guess, is the summary.
I think that's probably fair.
Right. Now it's happened, I would like to talk about this less in hypothesis and in reality, Charlie. Did Leicester sleepwalk their way to relegation? Because we talk about it before the event, but did they actually do it? I think they did.
I think they quite possibly could be on that list of teams. I also think they are, you know how this thing's always said that, I just don't think really is, you'd be like, there's always one team that gets, you know, look at it, because there's always one team that gets sucked back in.
Did they get sucked back in?
They were the team, because when they beat Spurs really handily in February and actually looked quite good, but they got very much sucked back in after that. They went on a terrible run.
I'm delighted to see that old faithful become relevant again. I'm really chuffed with that. I never thought about that one.
Is sleepwalking over the course of the season, and the sucked back in was
part of the season? Getting sucked back in is essentially a business end situation. Sleepwalking isn't just necessarily your form across the season. It's the bigger picture things, the running of the club, and have they failed to kick on from a certain level? I mean, obviously, they won the league a few years ago. So, you know, I think there's a bigger picture element to it, Charlie. But what perhaps undermines the sleepwalking is they actively tried to prevent it. They sacked their manager and got a new one in, and he failed to keep them up.
But was it too late?
That's essentially waking yourself up. You are awake. They were awake to the possibility of it, which I think might undermine it.
Yeah, but they did it. I think you can still use it for sleepwalking, because they did it too late, the sacking.
Yeah.
If you're sleepwalking and you wake up and you've walked into the middle of the road, like, then you've woken up too late.
He's back. He's still here. He's not going away just yet. Anyway, right. This is a philosophical debate for us. Dave says, this came from Nolsey, CPFC. He says, how exactly can Jacob Murphy claim anywhere enough credit for his goal of the season contender when it was a 1 yard tap in? How can it qualify for such an award when all the work was done in the assist? This was the Alexander Isak dribble at Goodison Park. I mean, it's a fair point, but I suppose you have to look at a goal in a holistic way, don't you? I think it's okay. But ultimately, the lead up to it, be it the assist or whatever, you know, like the dribble, has to be otherworldly in quality, doesn't it?
And this was an exceptional run.
Yeah.
To the point where I remember saying this to you. I said, I almost sort of think it's kind of goes beyond an assist. To describe it merely as an assist does it a disservice, in a way.
Yeah.
He has essentially scored the goal. Really.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
It is a tricky one, because it's not, if you think of other examples, I mean, the Jack Wilshere one against Norwich, but he was heavily involved in the build-up, and there was the one, it was sort of a series of 1-2s and skills. I can't think of one where a Maisie run and then put it on a plate for someone else has got into a goal of the season.
I think you've cited a really good example there, Dave. Thing about the Wilshere goal, Charlie, is that he crowned a move, essentially. He was the final piece of the jigsaw in a team move. So it's kind of okay to call it the Wilshire goal, as many people do, but you can't call it the Jacob Murphy goal, can you? And I think that's perhaps the crucial distinction. Ultimately, I'm happy for it to be included in the shortlist because it belongs, because it's notable. Should not win, and goals like that should never win.
Yeah, I had the same thought with that Wilshire goal, because I was thinking, what's another one where it's about the build-up rather than the actual goal? I mean, you're right, David, that Wilshire does play a part in the build-up, but if he hadn't, it wouldn't matter. Like, if that had been someone else doing all of that stuff, it still would have been... Like, it's just the fact that it's such amazing, intricate passing. It helps, obviously, that he's been involved, because it looks like it's he's sort of building it up. But it's ultimately just about how good that passing and moving is. What is weird about this goal, and I can't really remember a precedent, you're right, of it's just all about the assist. The goal is such a minor part of it. But I don't know, should that count it out? Maybe.
Assist of the season to start a new competition on the BBC? I'm sure the Premier League have probably got one of those, because they gave an award for like most powerful shot of this season,
Si
didn't they?
Yeah, Benrahma won most powerful shot. And I watched the clip back, and it's just like, it's really underwhelming. Like, it's like, oof, so what?
Does it go in?
So the most powerful goal of the season.
Right, yeah. I was going to say otherwise. So I'm booting it into Rose Ed.
Some poor bastard on Wyscout having to watch 550,000 shots across the season. Right, back to Sky Sports News. Listener Sam, good old listener Sam. He says, one of those weird transfer news blokes on Sky Sports News said Spurs fans will want to wrap up Harry Kane in cotton wool to keep him at the club. But wrapping a player in cotton wool only prevents injury, doesn't it? If anything, he'd be more sellable wrapped in cotton wool.
Absolutely. Yeah, he's ready for delivery.
In original packaging. I love that. Yeah. But yeah, Charlie, can't argue with the logic here. Cotton wool is purely for keeping players from injury and not from keeping them from being sold.
Yeah, no, you don't want to do that. I mean, either what you want to do is make them as unappealing, so you want to do the opposite almost, or you just want to kind of hide them away in hibernation for the summer. Yeah. Obviously, not normally done in a different season, hibernation, clues in the name. But you just want them as unaware of everything that's going on as possible.
Lock him up.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, it becomes a bit sinister.
Chain him down. Yeah. Tie him down. Well, I mean, that's what new contracts are.
Yeah.
New contracts, tie players down. That's the go, yeah. There you go. Tie him down. Sticking on a Spurs theme, Dave, JJ Shaw gets in touch, says, Leeds fan here. It's fair to say Lucas Moura waltzed through the Leeds defence for Spurs' fourth goal on Sunday. I just wondered what you and the team think the threshold is for the proverbial waltzing. Does it necessarily require the attacker to skip through the epicentre of the defence, leaving defenders in his wake? My only fear for this goal, Dave, is that he did it too quickly. It's close to a waltzing, Charlie, isn't it?
Yeah, I think a waltzing... There does have to be some degree of bad defending, because it's too easy. Like, waltzing is such a kind of recreational thing.
Yeah.
So the idea that you can just do it through people who should be quite aggressively trying to stop you.
I think the context for it was, you know, textbook waltz territory. I just fear that Lucas Moura was just too quick and too direct for the waltz. Dave, that's my fear for this.
I see, yeah, I think you see what you mean. He is going quite quick. He sort of changes directions a few times.
Okay, that helps.
Does that help for a waltz? Yeah.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Like, the more skill and jinking involved makes it waltzy. I just fear for the velocity of it.
What is the ultimate waltz then?
Kincladsey? Is that a kind of... Because he's not going particularly quickly.
The defence wasn't errant enough there. He literally was a great dribble. Like, that's the problem.
Chris Marsden?
Chris Marsden's a good shout, yeah.
Quite waltzy. It's higher in the waltzy scale, but still quite an absurdly good...
John Barnes in the American R?
Again, too much of a solo effort. Not hapless enough on the... I don't know, I can't think of a particularly waltzy goal.
But that's why, I think, linked to what you're saying about being too quick, because a few of them are just sort of outpaced.
Yeah.
That feels less hapless in a way. Like, there's not a huge amount you can do once someone...
There is a goal that comes to mind for me that I think actually would qualify as a waltz, because the defenders kind of just sort of fall over and let him through and he just walks through. But I don't... Even Charlie, I don't think, will remember this goal.
Okay.
It was Roberto Pereira for Watford against Huddersfield in October 2018.
No, don't remember that.
No. All I had in my head was Nedumanua versus Chelsea, which had an element of waltz to it, but it was too good a finish at the end.
Well, it was quite a scuff finish.
Oh, okay. Oh, it's quite waltzy then. Yeah, that could be one. Quite low pace.
Yeah.
Yeah, dainty.
That's also a bit of a found himself. Because he was like, what? And that finish did slightly reflect a kind of, what are you doing here type moment.
Agreed. Everton, of course, staved off relegation on the final day. Did they stave off? Did they? You can't stave off on final day. Have I got that wrong?
No, I think they did because they were outside the relegation zone before it. So not like they were in the bottom three and they managed to get out on the last day. They were trying to stave off Leeds and Leicester by getting the win.
Other teams. You stave off relegation.
Well, yeah, but it's the same.
Who staves things?
What same sort of
yeah, feeling. Yeah, fine. Nonetheless, Sean Dyche had some forthright appraisals of their season and how they move forward.
I think we need to collect it all back together, realign it, get us back on board, get the fans connected to what we are as a team, to what I am as a manager. And then there'll be another day when hopefully I'll put enough things in place if I get my time here, when a fashionista can come in and they'll all have a beautiful product. But for now, it's something that actually needs a rawness, a heartbeat that the people of the Evertoners, in my opinion, can grip to and go, right, we have got a group that are giving every inch of it. A build on that.
I mean, to a certain extent, Dave, I think he's right that you need all those intangibles to drag Everton back into shape and that sort of stuff. But then he just can't help himself. He can't help himself. Fashionista. Such a dicey thing to say.
It is. It is. But at the same time, I can almost see like some people, you know, talking about like, actually, this guy from Syria, he's a bit of a fashionista type, actually. Like you can sort of see that language working its way into certain circles within football. You know what he means. It's one step away from if my name was Aladdin. Sean Diccio.
Danny Diccio, yeah. Yeah. Absolutely right. Right. This seems to be not a particularly modern phenomenon, Charlie, but I've seen some uproar about this. CG writes in, says, where do we stand on people wearing next season's kit at the end of the season? Edward Rose also says, how do we feel about teams wearing next season's kits on the last day? Personally, I think it's disrespectful to the day and the outgoing kits. I think it's fine. I think it's a nice little tradition. It's like looking ahead, isn't it?
I remember when this started, and it's a long time. It's like more than 20 years ago.
Easily. Yeah. But
I remember it feeling like quite a big thing.
I think it's good. And even as a cynical marketing exercise, I think it's good. I think it's probably the healthiest piece of club commercial activity you can do. Here's the new kit for next season. Roll up. Things are can only get better. That sort of thing.
Yeah, and I am slightly fascinated by the end of the last day of the season. It is just amazing for like throwing up weird stuff happening. And I think that anything that adds to it ever so slightly, like wearing the wrong kit, I think is fine.
I am fully on board with it if you've got nothing to play for. Because then I think it adds another layer of it adds something at least to the game for like your home supporters or your supporters to sort of go, oh, that's nice. I think it's weird if you're in the hunt for the title, for anything of significance or to stay up, and then that image of you,
yes,
it will forever be enshrined. You'll be in the wrong season's kit on that day.
It's going to make people get questions wrong on football cliches quizzes in 2045 or something like that. I mean, to a certain extent, you start to wonder, Dave, why the authorities haven't sort of clamped down. It says you can't wear the new kit. You've just worn it 37 times and you can't wear a different kit. It feels like something they would sort of say, we can't do that.
It's the integrity of the competition.
Yes.
If there's some sort of new technology in the shirts.
Absolutely. Sweat wicking. Your sweat was wicked more at the end of May. It's true. Massive. Could be. No, it's fine margins.
At that level.
It's those fine margins, isn't it? Right. Great mea culpa from listener Harry Gooner here, Charlie. He says, I'm afraid to admit that I thought on the beach meant a team was fighting on the beaches like D-Day. I thought it was said when a team is pinned down and being peppered with shots whilst trying to get back in the game and slowly gaining back control. I mean, it might be the most wrong anyone has ever got a football cliche. It literally means the opposite.
Yeah.
Wow.
I love with that because obviously whenever one gets things wrong, you fill in the gaps in your head. And although things seem weird, if you believe them to be the case, you're like, oh yeah, but I guess that's just because of that. He must have had to do a lot of that over the years of a team being described on the beach. Be like, yeah, I guess that makes sense.
Those conversations he must have drifted out of going, I'm not having this. This bloke's talking rubbish. Yeah. But Dave, for that to be your go-to reference, your go-to image for being on a beach seems strange.
Well, I mean, football and indeed much of the sort of political discourse is so littered with references to war and specifically the Second World War. I can sort of see why you might make that leap But maybe I'm being quite generous there. But yeah, at least he's admitted it.
Fair enough.
Fair play.
Finally on the adjudication panel then. An absurdly over-engineered piece of content came from the FA today. The FA Cup trophy, Charlie, has already had the word Manchester engraved on it to reflect the first ever Manchester Derby FA Cup final in the competition's 152-year history. They've been a bit too diligent. They've done a bit of work ahead of time. I think that's actually quite sad. I think there's something sad about it. I mean, take the symbolism out of the equation. The fact that they've done it early is quite funny.
Like, what, there are so many examples of people doing that when you're like, oh, I can slightly get ahead here. I know what won't change, but that is ludicrous.
Okay, so it's a nice little touch, Dave. It's accompanied by a 500-word piece on the FA's website describing this situation. The Emirates FA Cup's famous trophy has already been partially engraved to recognise and celebrate the first ever final between Manchester City and Manchester United. Okay, got it. Thomas Light, the competition's official trophy and silverware provider, are responsible for etching the winning's name into the history each season, and either the City or United will be added following the final whistle. Okay, I've got it. All of which means that not once in the competition's fabulously rich history has an engraver had the chance to etch even the first half of any finalist's name onto the trophy. Okay, we get it. The word Manchester will be on the cup by the time the winners have hoisted it aloft at Wembley. Yeah, I know.
I mean, I wonder, in 2015, when Arsenal played Aston Villa, did they do the A? Just in a... Saves a bit of time. Let's get ahead of it. The engraver's going to be busy on the day. Let's just make his life that bit easier.
Do you do the United in 99 when Newcastle played Manchester United?
Yeah. God knows. Fittingly, the engraving took place in the changing rooms at Wembley. Blah, 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 blah. The engraving of either City or United will then complete the process. Okay, we get it. We get it. The request is unprecedented and a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. Engraving the trophy with the name of the City that would eventually win the title, even before the final match, is a remarkable gesture. Each stroke of the hand engraving tool symbolised the historical significance and immense anticipation surrounding this fiercely contested Manchester derby. On Saturday, as United and City battle it out at Wembley, the finishing touch is waiting to be applied on and off the pitch. What a complete waste of time all of this is, as much as I quite like it in its own way.
They've saved, what, how many? How long does it take to engrave the word Manchester?
Apparently, according to this article, it takes place in the days and weeks after the final.
Right, so they don't do it.
I thought there was a man doing it in a room in Wembley, ready to do it.
I
find it all very strange. I really don't know what's going on.
Have they put the white ribbons on and they're going to add either the red
the
or...
The ribbons have not been applied. The article was very clear to state that. we're a bit muddled here. To bring us clarity, to bring us finality, it's time for Keys and Grey Corner.
Ford Super Sunday.
Let's kick off. It's Elizabeth Barnard again. She wants us, Charlie, to do a little review of Keezy's pre-season predictions. I've cherry-picked a couple of them. Please note that this isn't us just going back and saying, you got it wrong, because that is futile and cheap behaviour. There is some stuff here that he's got bang right. But crucially, all of these are done in the most Keezy way possible. Number one, I've never tipped City to win it. I don't know why, and I'm not going to now. Make no mistake, they should. They really should. They probably will. But Liverpool are due one, and I don't care what they say publicly. Guardiola, Mansour and co are desperate to win the CL. Without question, that's the one they must win. He's just so sure of himself at all times. It's superb.
I was going to include in the quiz, actually, something about when Liverpool were going for the title. Keyes in his blog wrote something about how there was only one man who said City wouldn't dominate forever, and that was Andy Gray. So utterly ludicrous.
Dave, here's Keyes on Brighton's prospects. Brighton, safe. No more, no less. And that should satisfy everyone at the Amex. Never, ever forget what you are. Strive for progress, but realise your station. Charlton forgot what they were, and look what happened. Like a little cautionary tale. Who are you? Who are you?
Also, could that be his worldview more? Know your place.
Knowing your place. Incredible kind of pre-patronising of Brighton there, Dave. I think this might be the best of the lot, actually.
Yeah, and still Charlton's the go-to reference. There's loads more examples you could have chosen from in the intervening years.
For instance.
Swansea, Stoke...
Charlton's amazing. Didn't they go down in 2007?
Let's give Keezy his dues here. Here are some that he absolutely nailed. Saints will struggle again. Hasenhüttl was lucky to survive the backroom clear-out. Those things rarely work unless you get rid of the lot, manager included. I don't think he'll be there in November. Sacked November the 7th.
There you go.
Nailed it. Next up, of the new boys, I think Forest are best equipped to survive. The City Ground will be a hard place to visit, but they'll still struggle to win 10 games. I reckon they'll have enough, just about enough, if they can win a few at home. Again, that's exactly why they stayed up.
Yep.
Done it. But, of course, here we go. Fulham, down. Bournemouth, down. If you push me, I'd go with Southampton to make up the relegated three. And if you're looking for a surprise struggler, it's got to be Leicester. And for the record, I've had two of the bottom three correct in each of the last two seasons. So be worried if you support them. I remember us taking the piss out of this the first time. That's a pathetic track record.
Be worried.
But he got it again. Fair play.
Yeah.
He called Leicester. He called it. Oh, my goodness. Honestly, superb. Superb. He gets it right 50% of the time. Fair play to him. Anyway, let's moving on. Here's Keys and Gray on Harry Kane's future.
Harry Kane should stay at Tottenham and play for the next 3 or 4 years and win nothing. Now, I'm not saying they won't, but and win nothing. Or let's just say, for instance, go to Manchester and have a chance of winning something. Where would you go?
Yeah, but if I'm,
why wouldn't
if I'm,
you do that?
Well, because if I'm Mrs. Kane, I'm thinking to myself, I'm winning right now. I've got a lovely house. I live in a lovely part of the world. The children are happy and settled. Harry's playing football in Tottenham. I've got family and friends around me that I don't want to leave. So I think all of those things have to be a consideration for him.
Yeah, they are a consideration. But that's a consideration. But the consideration is you can have a bigger and better house in Manchester. You can meet more friends in Manchester. Your friends are only in London. How long's the flight from Manchester to London? You would know.
Five minutes. I think.
So there you go. 2 hours on the train. You can back in King's Road with all your pals if you want.
I don't think it's as easy and as simple.
I think it is.
King's Road is amazing.
I love the King's Road reference. But it's such a 1970s way of looking at it, Charlie. Like, this is proper dinosaur stuff. It's like this idea that, you know, his wife will be happy wherever they are and she's got access to London and that sort of stuff. This is mad. This is absolutely mad.
But Keezy would think he's being very progressive there. He'd be thinking, you know, footballers are people too, Andy. No, it's not all just number of goals. You know, they're not robots. We have to appreciate that. And in so doing, it makes an incredibly sort of dated reading of how it works.
Andy Gray suggesting that they'll get a bigger and better house in Manchester
with better friends,
more money.
It might be true if you know you're just looking for a 3-bed house on an average budget. But I'm sure Harry Kane can afford a mansion wherever he wants.
Keezy goes later on in that clip. Keezy goes on to call it orderly wealth. Edge, which is fantastic stuff. Here's a tweet from Keezy on Tuesday morning. I watched Eamon Holmes' interview on GB News with interest. Part two tonight, but so far nothing we haven't talked about down the years. I understand his anger. Don't shoot the messenger. None of it is his fault. He's a class act and a top pro. Of course, he's team Eamon Holmes.
That has come out before, his respect and admiration for Holmes.
They're basically the same person.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Just like, little offshoots in the daytime TV family tree. Finally, the season's essentially over. Let's enjoy Keys and Gray signing off.
Is it for another season?
Are we done?
Well done, Everton.
So is.
That's us.
Another season?
Yeah. Andy and I will be back with the Champions League final, 2 weeks from now? And back with another season of Premier League football on Saturday, August the 14th.
The 12th. 12th?
12th.
12th.
We'll see you then.
Absolute pros. On no other broadcaster could you do this.
Won't the season start on a Friday anyway?
we'll do it all again.
Oh God, they'll be back and so will we, I hope. Anyway, business complete. That's our season done. But there's one final matter to take care of. This is David Walker's final Football Clichés appearance. Much like Graeme Souness was bid farewell by Sky Sports the other day. Dave, I'm so glad I collared you at the Athletic Christmas party all the way back in 2019 to suggest we did this podcast. I think I got you just the right number of pints in for you to be amenable to this idea.
And I was equally glad that you got there first. You preempted my...
Good.
I kind of had that in mind to do that as well. So we were both on the same page. And to be fair, it did take us a while to get going, I think.
Yeah.
But, you know, look how far we've come.
262 episodes, that's how far we've come. Fondest memories of yours across those episodes?
Obviously, the live shows were amazing moments to meet all the listeners and sort of see up close, you know, just how much people enjoyed it. But I've enjoyed it all, really.
It's been an absolute pleasure, isn't it, Charlie?
It really has. And it's very, very, very sad. I feel emotional.
Yeah, it shouldn't be happening, but it is happening, and we all have to just live with it. I don't know how we're going to live with it, but we are. Dave, I mean, there was one final piece of editing I was going to foist upon you. I was tempted to just dump all these clips on you and make you make your own farewell montage. But I've learnt from the best. This is the best bits of David Walker on the Football Clichés podcast. What a producer he was, by the way. We also have the Athletic's managing editor of audio. This is a bit like, in my head, this is a bit like when Abramovich comes down into the Chelsea dressing room or when a headmaster comes into a school lesson. It's David Walker.
Hello.
Thanks for coming on.
Well, thanks for having me.
You were just in the office. You were just around.
It was my decision. Yeah. So it's fine.
You are becoming a bit too involved in the kind of day-to-day things.
First of all, David Walker, the podcast chief, yet more critical acclaim for you. A DM from a friend of mine said, I liked the bloke who wasn't JPB a lot.
Okay. Well, that's good. Well, although that is a sort of a slight dig at JPB as well.
But I'm more worried about the fact that he likes you but still doesn't know your name, which suggests you've still got some work to do on this podcast. So don't get complacent. But the technical issue here is it allowed to be a drought if he hadn't scored for them in the first place?
I suppose if a river had never been full of water at any point, it wouldn't be a drought,
I suppose. No, that's actually really good. No, that's absolutely fine. That's probably one of your better Literally Dave moments, actually. Completely agree. Yeah. Who's the little and who's the large out of Gary Cheese and Dave Chalk?
I think Chalk's large, isn't he?
Chalk's lanky. Yeah, he's like a stick of chalk. Yeah.
Literally, Dave, absolutely coming into his own here.
Sticks of chalk are quite small. I mean, are they?
No, like the long ones you used to get at school. It was a lovely affair in Ibiza, all places, for my sins.
Can you hoof a header?
you can't hoof a header. I do like the idea of it, but you can't hoof a header, can you?
100th appearance. Congratulations.
Thank you. I was thinking about it. It all feels, to me, it feels like I've had more than 100, though, actually, in my head.
Well, you have, in theory, because you produced 90% of the episodes.
Yeah, I suppose that's why. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
First of all, Dave Walker, how are you doing?
I am very good. As I sat down to record this, I've just looked to my right where my wall chart is, and I've noticed that actually I filled yesterday's games in last night when I came in after a full day in the pub, and I've done it really sloppily, like outside the lines, can't even really tell what the score was in one of the matches. Apart from that, I'm fine, but I'm annoyed.
And I worked in scientific research.
For my sins.
After a break to have children,
You're a teacher from Kent. What subject do you teach?
I teach science.
For my sins.
For my sins.
Yes!
And I think you're a bit TikTok.
What are you doing with all that time?
Well, I've recently taken up a bit of tennis again. I've not played for quite a long time.
For my sins.
I still play a bit of football and...
Hi, I'm Lewis Jones. I'm from Haverhill in Suffolk, and I'm studying journalism for my sins.
For my sins. Yes!
Oh, no!
Yeah, home and away seem to get hold of the last 30 years from Sheffield, so for my sins.
For my sins. What is wrong with you lot?
Definitely I'm looking for pottery or particularly silver. I'm looking for pigs as well, for my sins.
My castle. I am Baron Corifax.
For my sins.
You are on my land.
David Walker, everybody.
Wow. Good job.
Not bad, eh?
Yeah. I can't believe how weird we all sound back in the early days. But it's not like the show's ending. I'm leaving, but the show will carry on. But yeah, thank you both. It's been an absolute pleasure.
An absolute honour. Genuinely brilliant. Yeah. You'll be back. I sense it. I sense it in many ways. You'll be back on this podcast. Thanks to everyone for listening. Thanks to everyone for enjoying and contributing to this podcast this season. We'll be back later this summer by hook or by crook. Thanks to you, Charlie Eccleshare.
Thank you. And thank you, Dave.
Thanks to you, David Walker.
Thank you.
And thanks to everyone for listening. See you in a while.
The Athletic.